A huge foods merger today with little to do with haute cuisine. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. Kraft and Heinz announced today they are merging. It is a $40 billion-plus deal that unites some of the biggest names in processed foods. There's even a Brazilian angle here. Marketplace's Noelle King joins us. Noelle, what would Heinz plus Kraft look like?
Well, it looks like a behemoth of a food company. You've got Heinz, which is the ketchup giant, merging with Kraft, whose brands include the famous mac and cheese. Kraft also owns Jell-O, Kool-Aid, Oscar Mayer, Philly cream cheese, so no shortage of familiar names. But Kraft has still struggled with flat sales as consumer tastes have changed. And it's worth noting Kraft doesn't own all the brands it once did. It's been divided up over the past couple years. And so Oreos, Tang, Nabisco, Triscuit, those are not Kraft brands anymore.
Yeah, those are over at Mondelez. Now, tell us more about the Brazilian private equity fund behind this.
Right. So since 2013, Heinz has been owned by a massive firm called 3G Capital. 3G is based in Brazil, but it has some really big connections here in the U.S. It teamed up with Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway to buy Heinz a couple years ago. It also owns Burger King and Tim Hortons. 3G was also behind the merger of Anheuser-Busch and InBev, which created the largest brewer in the world. And it has a reputation for being one of those firms that buys companies it considers to be too bloated and then aggressively cutting costs, which may offer us some insight into what it hopes to do with Kraft.
Marketplace's Noelle King, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
A hedge fund called American General has increased its bid for what remains of bankrupt Radio Shack. The bid is up $20 million to $165 million, according to Reuters. I was talking about Radio Shack's demise to Heather Landy at the business publication Quartz about how the store seemed to have become less about electronics and more about bugging you to buy batteries and extended warranties.
And asking for your zip code when you would make a purchase. They always wanted to know your zip code.
Every single time, actually.
Yes, which really freaked people out. The zip codes was about data. Before, people were used to being asked kind of personal questions that we all sort of give away for free and happily on the internet now. It was unusual to be asked those kinds of things. Warranties, batteries, those are very high margin products. So when Radio Shack saw that it wasn't going to make money on things like big screen televisions, it had to get aggressive in other ways.
Well, Bloomberg is now reporting that beyond the real estate and the store fixtures and the remaining antennas, headphones, and cell phone cases that are up for auction is also Radio Shack's customer database with 100 million names on it. At least two states oppose this on privacy grounds. Landy also makes an interesting point about the straw that broke Radio Shack's back wasn't its debt. It was strings attached to its debt. If you missed that on the air, the interview is at marketplace.org. It is the season for colleges to announce what they're charging for the coming academic year. At one Ivy, that rhymes with kale, undergraduate tuition is up 4% to $47,600, more than $62,000 with room and food. In the face of all this, students and parents around the country want to know that all this money will lead to a job someday. But where does this leave liberal arts education? Jillian Tett, U.S. Managing Editor for the Financial Times, wrote about this in a recent column. Ms. Tett, thanks for joining us.
Well, it's great to be with you.
So some argue that higher ed, the focus should be more toward vocational training, teaching toward the future job. If you want to be a programmer someday, start focusing on the programming in college, not so much English or history or poli-sci. But you think there's a danger in that?
Well, I think at the moment there's tremendous pressure both from politicians but also from parents and students who are looking at a mountain of student debt. The pressure is that they should be getting college degrees that match closely to jobs. The problem with that, though, is that the job market keeps changing, and people who train too narrowly, in particular technological skills, say computer coding, may discover by the time they actually come out of college that the world has moved on. So the kind of arguments that are supporting liberal education programs these days, liberal arts programs, are that what we need to be creating are students who are clever, creative, curious, the three C's, and above all else, adaptable.
It's so interesting. I mean, in fact, maybe history, I was a history major in college, in part. Maybe history informs us. If you think about the first dot-com revolution and you ask what specific vocational training should a person have received before 1989 or 1990 to prepare for the web, it's probably not computer science, maybe some kind of marketing, but what you really needed was critical thinking skills, information sifting skills, expressing yourself clearly with precision skills. These are something that the liberal arts done well can provide.
I mean, let me be honest, there are many liberal arts programs which are actually not that great and lack the kind of rigor that you need to really develop a mind. But when liberal arts is pursued properly and ideally combined with some science and mathematics, you really get that kind of Renaissance ideal, the image of somebody who's able to think both with numbers and with words. And that's a holy grail.
FT columnist Gillian Tett is also U.S. managing editor at the paper. Ms. Tett, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And in a move seen as Bitcoin getting even more serious, there's a new Bitcoin electronic marketplace that will use technology from a grown-up exchange, the NASDAQ. The new exchange for Bitcoin, the virtual currency, is called Noble. NASDAQ's Xtreme technology is widely used and battle-tested and is used by the big dogs, although the NASDAQ brand gets dented from time to time when its tech runs into trouble, such as during the ill-fated launch of Facebook's stock back in 2012, if you remember that. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.